Finding the right news podcast can feel like dating. It seems promising until you start listening.
When you hit play on Post Reports, you'll get fascinating conversations and sometimes a little fun, too. I'm Martine Powers.
And I'm Elahe Azadi. Martine and I are the hosts of Post Reports. The show comes out every weekday from The Washington Post.
You can follow and listen to Post Reports wherever you get your podcasts. It'll be a match, I promise.
Hello there. I'm Ann Thompson, editor-at-large for IndieWire.
And I'm IndieWire's deputy film editor, Ryan Latanzio.
And we're the co-hosts of IndieWire's weekly Screen Talk podcast.
Join us each week for an in-depth discussion of the latest in film and TV industry news with special guests along the way, including filmmakers and executives.
Hear from us every Friday morning on iHeart platforms or wherever you get your podcasts as IndieWire shares what we've learned from the movie week that was.
Pennies Going in Raw is a production of iHeartRadio. The opinions expressed in the following podcast are for general informational purposes only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual or on any specific security or investment product. It is only intended to provide education and entertainment about the financial industry and the stock market. Enjoy!
On this episode of Pennies Going in Raw, we interview Dr. Bullshark.
Find out life's this game of pennies.
Oh, you guys know we only have a 40% runner. Hello, 40% right is a f***ing killing.
We've been compliant for too long. It's time we go to war.
I don't have a Roth.
Q knows so much about the market that his brain doesn't have enough room for grammar.
Hey, who told me about IDEX? It's going up a shit ton now.
Rob, 4%, baby.
No way.
4%.
You asked the exact same question with two words different.
It's like, f*** man, I just got dick whipped for like 20%, and now that f***er's up like 50.
I bet Warren Buffett never did that.
I'm just making this voice memo to call out unusual whales to a fight.
The pennies we need are everywhere around us.
Pennies.
Going in raw.
Featuring Dan, Deity of Dips,
and Hugh Honey.
Produced by Vinny
and Christian.
Let's go, baby.
Welcome back to another episode of Pennies Going in Raw. We have on Dr. Bullshark with us. No medical related anything, but how are you doing, man? Thanks for joining us.
Hey, excellent, man. Thanks for having me.
Of course. So I know Hugh found you. Hugh, what exactly struck you out that we had to interview this guy right here? I mean, you see the pinned tweet, 24-year-old millionaire. I mean, that's impressive already.
Yeah, no, I mean that alone is pretty impressive, but you know, it feels like on FinTwit, there's a few things. One, I'll say, you know, Bull, you've always been super kind to me. Like, you know, I feel like FinTwit can be really toxic sometimes, and I feel like you're just one of those dudes who, like, you know, wants everybody to kind of do well. And I've always admired that, you know, like you and I aren't super close. You know, we actually just started talking recently. Because of reason number two, which is Dave from Breathe Carolina. You know, I know your golfing buddy. You guys have been have a lot of fun golfing. You know, I know that you guys have been trading together. And, you know, I respect him like a homie. And he said so many great things about you. And like I said, then you and I started communicating. And it's really just gone from there. And I think that, you know, it's really cool what you're trying to do. And I think that it's different. I think that the way that you trade is kind of different from how most people trade, and even the way that, like, you kind of run your room. So that was pretty much what attracted me. But like I said, is that overall one of the biggest things is just that, you know, the dude that, you know, that I think that you are, and that you portray yourself, you know, just being a cool dude, you know.
All right. Well, after this, I want your remarks on me, because that was super sweet. Anyways, but before we get into your strategies and stuff, would you mind telling us, like, how and when you got into trading? Obviously, you're a young guy. A lot of people would probably love to start trading around your age and, you know, just get into it.
Sure. So I actually graduated UC Santa Cruz with a degree in marine biology and environmental science. I used to work for the government for National Oceanographic and Atmospheric Administration. At the time, they were paying me really, really bad. It was around $14, $15 an hour, working really long hours. I was investing at the time. Not as much as you would expect. I started with around $25,000. I actually ran that down, starting to learn how to trade, down to $5,000.
And what year is this?
This was around, I want to say 2018.
Okay.
So around 2018, just starting to pick up how to trade. I was doing a lot of note taking, trying to realize, you know, what my mistakes were, where I needed to, you know, touch on for my strengths, what was working out, and you know, building my strategy around that time. You know, now coming into the COVID market, you know, with a little bit of experience, I was starting with around like $5,000, and then, you know, just like, you know, COVID market was kind of crazy. Now I had the skills to kind of be able to capitalize on that. And, you know, literally almost every single trade that I was taking was working out, was able to consistently repeat that over and over again. So, you know, building a nice bankroll throughout time, and then starting to take, I don't want to say riskier trades, but, you know, more calculated, better paying trades, you know, using derivatives. So going from there, I was really building my strategy around not just breakout trading, but I was doing a lot of small caps, a lot of options. So I transitioned more so from an investor to, you know, a day trader. And then around 2021, a little bit before that, like 2020, I went full time into trading, you know, wasn't working for NOAA anymore. And yeah, so here we are.
One thing I think is super interesting because, I mean, you had the downtime from, not downtime, but like when your account's going down from 2018 until the COVID market hits, and you're able to use those skills you learned to kind of just take more advantage than just the guy that just picked up a Robinhood account in March of 2020. How are you kind of handling the first kind of, you know, market that is finally getting back to, you know, it's a down market for the first time that we've seen in quite a while. How are you kind of handling that?
Actually, to be honest, this year is one of my best performing years ever. The down market pays as well, if not better, than trading the up market. Why? Because volatility pays in your favor. So if you don't have a directional bias and you're trading whatever's in front of you, you should be able to capitalize on any type of market. And if you're a new trader coming into this type of market, this is actually, you know, in my opinion, the perfect opportunity to learn, because it's going to build you to be a better trader for the future. And when the market does end up turning around, you're going to have the facilities to be able to capitalize on it.
There's a lot happening these days, but I have just the thing to get you up to speed on what matters without taking too much of your time. The 7 from the Washington Post is a podcast that gives you the 7 most important and interesting stories, and we always try to save room for something fun. You get it all in about 7 minutes or less. I'm Hannah Jewell. I'll get you caught up with the 7 every weekday. So follow the 7 right now.
Hello there. I'm Ann Thompson, editor-at-large for IndieWire.
And I'm IndieWire's deputy film editor, Ryan Latanzio.
And we're the co-hosts of IndieWire's weekly Screen Talk podcast.
Join us each week for an in-depth discussion of the latest in film and TV industry news with special guests along the way, including filmmakers and executives.
Hear from us every Friday morning on iHeart platforms or wherever you get your podcasts as IndieWire shares what we've learned from the movie week that was.
Okay, so do you pretty much just trade like 2 to 3 strategies and replicate, you know, those 2 to 3 strategies? Or do you have like one consistent strategy that you zeroed in on and, you know, that's your one strategy?
So for the most part, I trade QQQ. That's my bread and butter. Yeah. Around 60 to 70% of my total trades are on QQQ. I do love trading the earliest expiry options. I'll trade them for a short amount of time, anywhere from, you know, it could be 10 minutes to an hour on my trades, depending on directionality, depending on momentum and the trend. But I do trade other stocks. It really depends. So if QQQ is in a range, I'm not going to sit there and try to scalp the range. I will look for trends. I would probably define myself more so as an options trend trader. So if there is a nice defined trend, I don't mind hopping on it late, because I know the move is going to work out in my favor. I can take size up on that trade. If the options are liquid, I can go in, make my money, and hop out.
Got it. So when you were growing your account, because I, you know, obviously you said that, you know, while you were learning, you know, you kind of drained that, those the thousands of dollars that you had, you know, and then obviously you had to scale, because I would guess, you know, for you guys that are listening on Spotify or anything, you know, I'm looking at your watch and I think your watch is more expensive than your original account size. So growing that account size, you know, did you, was it like a small consistent thing where you would try and grow like 1%, 2% a day? Or when you got, you know, when you felt comfortable, were you sizing like 40% of your account on a trade that you felt good about? How'd you kind of scale that?
That's a great question. So it was really, really trade dependent. So if I wasn't comfortable on a trade, I was taking smaller, more consistent gains. Like I'm very comfortable with taking a 10, 15% gain, 20% gainer on options. That's very, very realistic. You know, maybe like a candle or two will give you 15, 20% on an option that's expiring either that day or within a few days. But that being said, I have a strategy that I use to be able to capture that bigger move as well, just in case it does end up going, you're able to make that larger chunk on that bigger move. And it's super relative to how you decide to trade. The way I found works best for me is taking multiple strikes when I take my entries. You know, one that's closer to being in the money. That way you get that delta gain a little bit easier. And you can put your size. So, for example, you can put like 60%, 70% of your position on those strikes that are closer to in the money. And as soon as they go in the money, I'll scale out of them. And then I'll take strikes that are, you know, a bit further out the money, just in case it does end up making that move. You will get a big, big delta gain on those further out strikes. But you don't have to put, you know, a big chunk of your position on that, you know, just in case it ends up going against you, you know. It's all relative to your position size. You won't lose as much, but if it does end up going, you're going to make a lot more than you're risking.
Nice.
So you, I know you said you mainly trade QQQ, so you're more of an options guy, and you started out, I imagine, more so just investing as you, you know, had a job, unless you were just
absolutely
not in the job. How did you transition into options? I know you're talking about volatility and how much you love that, so. Yeah, how do you kind of make the transition into options, especially, I mean, you know, them, because so many people associate them with being so risky.
Yeah, so the thing is, so the way I transitioned, I was doing them anyway. So I would say my biggest wins are definitely on options. How I made that transition was really trying them out. And that was part of my process of losing my initial starting amount. You know, you see the options availability, you want to go test it out. You try things, you lose money, you realize what went wrong. And then you start adding that to your notes saying, hey, I did this, it didn't work out. Hey, I did this and it started working out. Let me try to repeat the things that are working out for me, cut out the things that aren't working out for me. And then, you know, next thing you know, after a few months, you have a strategy for yourself that's going to be working for you, and you're able to repeat it, you know, every day, or, you know, you're able to swing options. Actually, swinging options is one of the most profitable way to use options in the first place.
Yeah, no, I personally love swinging options for, you know, beating down stocks and to hedge positions as well. I mean, I think there's so many different ways to play it. When you say you only do QQQ, if you're starting to become friends with this guy, you've got to have a Roth. Are you doing any longer term investing stuff right now, or are you kind of prepping for maybe some lower prices given, you know, the current market situation?
Oh, no, I definitely have a Roth, but on my Roth, I only do S&P.
My dog.
But yeah. S&P is just the way to do it. Like, there's just so much time, especially when you're young, like, you know, 1 or 2 years being on a downtrend is not going to be anything compared to, you know, 30, 40 years out from now. So it's all relative. Yeah, I do have an IRA. I actually started one for my sister as well. Shout out. Actually, I heard that on PGIR like way, way back, like when you guys just started, you know, Henny was talking about it. And I'm like, wow, you know, my sister doesn't have one. Might as well just go open up, you know, a Roth for her as well.
And sister Dr. Bullshark's getting married soon, right?
Yes, she is.
As a wedding present, you know, you can contribute for this year. Yeah. Who wants a house fund or an air fryer when you can get your Roth contributed to as a wedding gift, you know?
Exactly. Max contributions.
until she realizes you can. Can't you withdraw it penalty free for your first home buy?
You can. You can. That's true.
So she may However, just take we it just all don't out.
Tell her that. Yeah. That's
all right,
cool.
So, yeah. Go ahead, Mitch.
No. I was just going to say, you know, what really led you to, because I know that you have your own room and you still put out a lot of stuff, you know, on your Twitter. But what made you kind of want to do your own room what has been the good part about the room and kind of like the challenging part from your view?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I started the room in September, October of this past year. I really started it because there was a lot of people transitioning into options. Obviously, there was a time last year where these mid caps and small caps were just getting hammered and people needed to find a different outlet to make money, right? So I had the ability to kind of teach them. It's just a bit overwhelming when there's so many people relying on you. So I really started my room to build a community of people that are really focused. And, you know, I do give out my positions as well, and I stream and I show them what I do. But at the end of the day, the goal was to build a community where we can, one, rely on each other, two, you know, walk through the day together, essentially, and then, you know, have me there to ask opinions, questions, just to walk through the trade. So, that was my main focus for starting my group. And now, it's been going great. We have around 200 people that come in every day. We hang out together, trade together, laugh, have a good time. It's also super entertaining because, I don't take many trades throughout the day. I take maximum 4 or 5 trades throughout the day. There's a lot of downtime. I do focus on the mornings. Mornings have been, the best money possible right now. So, between the downtime, it makes it fun to have people to talk to, listen to music, hang out, and just really focus on not being forced to take a trade, which is, where a lot of people end up losing their money. So, it is really, really important to not get bored when you're trading. Otherwise, you're just going to force a trade that you know that you shouldn't be taking.
Yeah, no, that's a big issue for a lot of people. And you're talking about only taking a few trades per day and you only trade basically QQQ. And you're basically just spending all day looking for the right setup. So what exactly are you looking for that screams, hey, this is the setup that I want to use as one of my few trades of the day?
It's not necessarily a specific setup. There's a lot of different setups. I love playing flush plays. I like playing the breakouts. More so, I'm looking for a trend. And that being said, those 5 trades aren't all coming from QQQ. Maybe 1 or 2 of them are coming from Q, and then the rest are coming from elsewhere. Really, I'm looking for something that's moving. I don't want to play something that's in a range. I don't want to play something that's just going to consolidate all day. I want something that's either going to break out, have momentum. I look for strength within sectors, which is one of the things that I really focus on. For example, oil has been running for months. Wake up, trade oil. There's always going to be a pop off the open. You can capitalize on that really, really quick. If that's your trade of the day, that's your trade of the day. You stand up, you walk away, you take your money. Then there's some days that, you have all day runners or all day faders, and you can sit there and you can just be rolling into the next strike, and, making that bigger picture move.
Yeah, no, I always think it's funny how it's like any other job. If you're having a shitty day at work and the manager's like, hey, anyone can go home. We need to cut someone. You're like, oh, me, first one out. But if you're having a shitty day trading, people are like, oh, no, now I have to trade more, over trade it.
Yeah, exactly. That's really, really one of the drawdowns of traders, and it's the boredom. You don't have to sit there in front of your screen all day and try to catch a trade. Although when you are learning, that screen time is really crucial. And I would say that's one of the things that really changed up my game. I was sitting there every single day from pre-market to aftermarket, and just looking for setups, looking for what's happening, and trying to gauge an understanding of how the market itself moves, how it reacts to news, how it reacts to the macro events, and being able to capitalize on that later. You don't have to sit there all day, but you do need to do it in the beginning to kind of gauge your understanding of sentiment, to gauge your understanding of when it's a range day, when it's a strength day, weakness day, etc.
Yeah, no, you just mentioned oil, and just recently you had tweeted about, to be exact, it's horrible to see people short a long trend or long a short trend. This is where the money's lost. And you were just talking about oil and how it's been on a trend. Could you kind of explain what you mean by longing trends that you should short and like why people are doing it and kind of how to avoid it?
Yeah, that's a really, really good one. So it's funny to me when someone sees an all day trend, like this thing is up like, you know, let's say 6%, 7% intraday, and it's on a clearly defined trend, people will just be sitting there throwing money into a strike, trying to play the flip side, not realizing that they're, you know, more than likely going to get caught and they're going to get burned and, you know, lose a lot of money. You know, maybe once in a blue moon, it's going to work out and they're going to get a cheap entry and it's going to flip on them and they're going to make money. But the thing is, that type of trading is not sustainable.
Yeah,
you're going to burn a lot of premium. Yeah, you're going to build some bad habits. You're always going to try to top tick, try to bottom tick, which isn't the strategy. You know, that's if you want to gamble, go to Vegas, you know, but that's not a sustainable way to trade, especially options. You're going to get burned on premiums every single day if you do that.
Do you ever see a proper setup in something that just does have options, or do you ever, I mean, or are you just strictly options guy?
Like I'm like 99% options. I do like small caps sometimes, but I won't sit there and look for small caps myself. Although if there's momentum, I will take some opportunities on them. I don't know if you know Thiz. Oftentimes finds like fantastic small caps. Barnamo is great at them. Mitch picks. So I do have my eyes out for them, but I won't necessarily sit there and look for them when I know I can have my consistent gainers with my options.
Yeah. What do you call it? This is great. He trades so much stuff and he trades.
Yeah,
so much
that's
stuff
my
so
boy.
Well.
I've been actually working with him to try to get him onto the options game because his technical analysis skills are fantastic. He just needs to learn, you know, the back end stuff of options, and then you know, you can change your life really and, you know, not just wait for your small caps all day, but have the opportunity to sit there and play options. And then when your small cap comes, you can go and take that trade, make money on both sides.
Would you say one of your bigger strengths as a trader, just from talking to you so far, it seems like it'd be your discipline. Was that one thing you struggled with during 2018 when you were learning to trade and taking too many trades? I mean, just the, even for me, it's tough if I'm having a day where I'm trading my ass off to, you know, not take that 413th trade, you know, like it doesn't matter how long you've been in it.
Absolutely. So one of my biggest, you know, problems that I had trying to come up was, you know, having way too many positions. In the COVID market, it did work out where you can take like, you know, 5-6 positions open intraday and have them all work out for you because everything would go at once. But when I was starting, it was like, you know, 2018, 2019, I would be swinging like 6 different things, you know, maybe 2 or 3 of them would work out. The other ones, you know, loss would be bigger than the gain on the other ones. And, you know, eventually it led to like a net loss. So, you know, one of the things that I had to focus on was, hey, instead of taking, you know, 5-6 trades overnight and sitting on them and hoping, you know, maybe I should focus on 1 or 2, make sure that the setup is in my favor, and then, you know, focus on that and try to play those out. You know, just having the feeling that you don't have to be in the trade, even if the setup might be in your favor, take the more confident setup.
I bet you're smart.
Yeah, and you like to hold your own in the group chat.
We can help you drop even more knowledge. My name is Martine Powers.
And I'm Elahe Izadi. We host a daily news podcast called Post Reports.
Every weekday afternoon, Post Reports takes you inside an important and interesting story with the kind of reporting that you can only get from The Washington Post.
You can listen to Post Reports wherever you get your podcasts. Go find it now and hit follow.
The Toolkit Podcast is where your favorite filmmakers come to talk about their craft and process.
I don't want a sloppy angle in my movie ever.
It's like being a dancer. You find the freedom in the structure.
It's where Tarantino, Gerwig, Scorsese, and Jordan Peele discuss their latest films, and showrunners take us behind the scenes of the best of TV.
Hosted by IndieWire's craft team, Toolkit is an award-winning podcast that gets at the heart of what really matters for filmmakers, like Spike Lee.
It comes back to this storytelling. What can I use in my toolbox?
So Have you had a moment, or let me see, what kept you going when you were, you know, I don't want to say getting smoked, but when you were learning to trade?
I mean, 25,000 to 5,000. I mean,
yeah.
It's getting, you know, smoked. I mean,
especially like I'm trying to put myself inside your mindset when you're at 7,000, you know, I'm assuming, you know, to anybody, 25,000 is a lot of money, but you know, especially at that time, I'm assuming that money was a large, not a large majority, but you know, a majority of your net worth or meant more to you than what it does now.
You know, cause you're what, like 20?
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, no, yeah, so, dude, I had no business seeing 25 grand at 20 years old.
Kind of put me inside that mindset of, you know, when you were at 7,000 and, or, you know, 7, 8,000 or sub 10,000, you know, you're down, what, 60, 70, 80% on your portfolio. You know, put me into that mindset about why you kept, you know, persevering and why you, you know, didn't want to just quit and save the last $7,000 that you had.
You know, shout out to my mom for this one. This is actually super relative to her situation. So I'm actually a first generation, you know, American. My parents were, my mom was from Lebanon. My dad was from Armenia. So they came here as immigrants. My mom actually came to the US with $18 in her pocket. Wow. And somehow she made it, you know, she was able to, you know, make a living, have a family, do all this stuff, even though the odds were totally against her favor. And, you know, I kind of owed it not just to myself, but like to her to really try, you know, till the end, like all or nothing. So, you know, once you get to that point of almost desperation where you're like at your last leg, you realize like, hey, like this is the make or break, you know, you either push it, do whatever you can to really, really, you know, not just get back, but hey, you know, you have 5,000 left, you're starting from scratch, you have all this experience behind you, you know, are you going to press it or are you going to take that 5K and you're going to walk away with your tail between your legs, right? So it's really just a mental thing at that point where, you know, you really have to want it. And then on the other end, so my dad passed away when I was 17 and, you know, I didn't want to rely on anyone for money, especially taking that away from my mom because, you know, she has her sisters to support, my sister to support, you know, so it's just really wanting that independence factor and, you know, proving to myself beyond anything that, hey, you know, there's this guy that can do it. There's this guy that can do it. You know, what makes me any different? I can do it. So that's really awesome. Yeah, that's really what pushed me forward.
Now, I always love those back against the wall kind of stories. When you're looking at the market now, obviously, we were just talking about the volatility. Do you look at the, you know, overall state of things, like, or are you just focused on today, this trade right now, or do you kind of think about like shit? 3 months from now, I mean, some people are saying this may crash or oil could do this or that, or are you just focused on the here and now?
The here and now is the best. That being said, when you're looking for your setups, you want to think of the bigger picture, not just looking left, but also thinking right. You know, what can happen? Can this trend continue? Will this trend end? But that's why I really like trend trading. For the most part, those trends end up continuing. Right. Like, for example, if you pull up the stock AbbVie, I had a fantastic swing on AbbVie because I was able to ride that trend for
And what's that ticker for anyone listening that's trying to get
it? It's ABBV.
Okay.
So, you know, AbbVie was on a tear for like months, you know, and I just kept rolling and rolling and rolling. And like that for me is like a bigger picture trade. Yes, I do focus on my intraday trades, but you know, you can have swings working in the background that are consistently paying you, you know, and be able to capitalize on that. And on the other side, I do like selling options as well. You know, selling options and collecting premium on high implied volatility options are a great way to make passive income too. So I do that on the side, but my main focus is on intraday trades.
Yeah, what do you call it? That's typically, you know, I pretty much trade like the same, you know, far out expiring, you know, same, you know, out of the money, etc. So when I see them, you know, going, I think I saw them last FOMC, they're trading like double the usual premium And selling them is a really great way to...
Man, it was ridiculous. Q was at like 150% implied volatility last week.
Yeah, exactly.
Q should be at like an average of like 30%. You know, that 30, 40% is already pushing it. You know, then you have names like Roblox with like, you know, 70, 80%. It's wild. It's wild.
No, exactly. I typically trade, you know, things trading between like $4 to $7 or, you know, really like $2 to $7, the options. And, you know, some of like the ones I typically traded, like the $4 mark, were trading at like the $7. Like, that's ridiculous, you know? But
On days like that, I generally tend to avoid it. You know, you're going to be overpaying for the premium to not get much more out of it, right? So generally when there's high volatility days, you know, there's no reason to really trade it. You know it's going to end up coming back. Like, you have to have that patience to sit there and wait for it to actually come back and then shift your focus elsewhere. You know, like, Bank of America is a fantastic stock to trade. Like, the premiums are really cheap. The IV is generally low. It moves fluidly. And there's a bunch of other ones. You know, you don't have to necessarily stick on the indexes. So that's why I have like quite a broad range of things that I trade. I'm not going to sit there and press something that's not working out. You know, I'll just shift my focus elsewhere, or I'll just sit out.
Yeah, definitely. And then, I only have a few more questions, but the one that I always ask, or you know, the one that we always ask different traders is, how do you handle your big red days? Do you typically, are you like an angry red day guy? Are you like a, curl up and take a nap kind of guy? You know, what? Talk to me about your big red days, because we all have, those big red days that, maybe we make, one bad trade and, maybe the account's down, a small loss. And then all of a sudden, we try and take another trade with bigger size and we, turn that into a bigger loss.
There's one thing I've learned from this interview is that you probably don't make the overtrade move.
I won't sit there and overtrade, but it does happen. To be honest, gym is my solace. Like, every day after the market, I'll go hit the gym for like 2 hours. I actually used to be like almost 300 pounds, man. And, just going to the gym every single day after the gym really helped me find some type of calmness. And that translates into my trading as well. I keep super, super calm, whether I'm winning or losing. Yeah, wins are great, but losses don't affect me. Like other people, I'm taking an assumed risk when I'm going into the trade. If it doesn't work out, it doesn't work out. I'd rather celebrate my victories than sit there and sulk in my losses all day, because that's not going to help anything, right? And I always say, don't let your last trade affect your next one. If you're sitting there and sulking on your last trade that didn't work out, guess what? You're going to miss the opportunity to capitalize on your next trade that might work out twice as well, you know? So really making each trade be independent to itself is super, super important, and not letting that translate, and then wait for the market to close and then react how you would, and take that energy out on the gym. You know, if you had a bad day and you have all this pent up anger or, resentment, go press some weights and, exit that energy into the gym and not into your, next trade.
Yeah, whenever you first said 300 pounds, I immediately, in 2 hours at the gym, I immediately thought of, like, I was like, fuck, that dude was ripped. And then I realized he meant like 300 pounds. Like, big. I was like, holy fuck, dude,
no,
yoked.
No. I was the opposite of yoked,
though. So I think this one's my last one. Obviously, there's a stigma with options. Obviously, they're risky, etc. And then people may hear people like you, or when we interview someone like Manz, and y'all have such a strategic approach to it. And you make it sound like, oh, this isn't exactly a gamble. This is more of a very strategic thing. It's not as risky as it sounds. Only what are your tips for someone trying to transition into options? Like, let's say they just made all their money on swings during the COVID market, taking FURU calls, and now obviously that's not working. What would you tell that guy?
So that's actually a really good question. The thing is, with options, you define your own risk factor. You know, if you're trading something that's way out the money and expiring super early, you're taking on like really unnecessary risk. Yes, they do pay like an insane amount, but don't focus on how much you're going to make. Focus on what your risk is, right? So if you're trying to take something that's less risky, go further out on the expiry, stick closer to the money. Yes, the options premium themselves are going to be more expensive, but guess what? You're buying safety, you're buying time, and you're buying less volatility on that specific option premium, right? So a drastic shift in the stock isn't going to make your option go to zero. You know, you might be down a couple percent, but that's better than being down your full position, right? So if you're trying to size heavy on a trade, just roll out into the further expiry, into something that's closer to the money, and you're buying that safety factor of it. So that's the thing that I really like about options, is you can determine your risk reward factor, right? You don't always have to go for that big gainer. Yes, you can take size if you're scalping, but if you're taking swings, go further on to the expiry and buy time. You know, you're buying it. At the end of the day, it all comes down to intrinsic and extrinsic value on your option, right? If you're buying only extrinsic value and you're hoping to be a consistently profitable options trader, all I have to say is good luck. You know, you have to have a strategy that's going to make you gain value on your contracts, right? Either on the short term or on the long term, right? So yeah, the best piece of advice is don't take super risky trades. You know, especially when you get used to it, you know which ones are risky and which ones aren't. But everyone loves that thrill of trading. Trading shouldn't be a thrill. Shouldn't be exciting. It should actually be as boring as it gets, right? And make it exciting by listening to music, but don't get your thrill out of taking those really, really risky trades, because you're going to get burned. I promise you that.
All right. I love it, man. All right. Well, do you have anything else for the people out there? Where to find you, your room, et cetera, et cetera?
Yeah. So I have a link on my Twitter. If you want to join, it's going to open up in a couple of days now. I generally try to keep it small. So I only, open up a limited amount of spots just to get them integrated into the room, because most of the people have been there for a while. It's more so like a community. So yeah, if you're trying to find that link, it's on my Twitter profile. Dan, you're more than welcome to join. Hugh's already in it. Don't just join my room. There's a bunch of other ones out there that are great too. You know, MapleStacks has a good room. Rodessa has a good room. Mans has a great room. If you're trying to transition into options and, you're going in blind, go join a room. Go listen to someone that's good at what they do, and pick up a few things, build your strategy, and then start soloing. Don't just go burn a bunch of money, trying to learn doing things that you have no idea, what to do. If you want to join my room, cool. If you don't want to, awesome. You guys are more than welcome.
All right, man. Well, thank you so much for taking time out of your Sunday to talk to us. I've really enjoyed it. And for anyone looking, it's Dr. Bullshark on Twitter. So go check him out. Thanks again for
coming. Yeah, thanks for having me.
All right, man. Well, have a good rest of the day.
Yeah, appreciate you.
Take care.
Penny's Going in Raw is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
there. I'm Ann Thompson, editor-at-large for IndieWire.
And I'm IndieWire's deputy film editor, Ryan Latanzio.
And we're the co-hosts of IndieWire's weekly Screen Talk podcast.
Join us each week for an in-depth discussion of the latest in film and TV industry news with special guests along the way, including filmmakers and executives.
Hear from us every Friday morning on iHeart platforms or wherever you get your podcasts as IndieWire shares what we've learned from the movie week that was.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.